This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hey, this is Jess Mowboy, proud to be heard on the beautiful Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That, Joy 94.9 with Chris,
Gordon
and Bill.
We're here again, gentlemen.
Oh, just another week's gone by.
Well, my week was gay.
Was it gay, was it?
Didn't go by.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. If you don't want to be bi, you can be gay. I don't mind.
It's not a choice, Gordon.
It's never a choice. No, you're right there. Yes.
Lady Gaga said, I was born this way.
We were certainly, yes.
Well.
And we're going to be talking a bit about that a bit later, aren't we?
We certainly are.
Yes, yes.
But it was interesting to note in last weekend's press, or as a result of some discussions that had been held publicly, that female genital mutilation is apparently now fashionable for some of our young college girls who think that they don't look the way they want to look downstairs, as they said on the radio, downstairs. They've been complaining too much to their mothers about these things, and then going to the medicals to have plastic surgery.
Oh, my God.
We are as we are.
Look, they've been trying to get the culture from the African countries to stop doing it.
Exactly.
And now they, oh, Lord.
Dear, that's not a very smart thing to do.
I'm so completely unqualified to comment on this subject.
Well, I will get into heaven minus my tonsils and my appendix.
I'm minus my tonsils, yes.
The rest of me giblets are all there, so.
Well, I didn't have any say in it.
Well, we
but
know
was,
about that.
There was a story about these two little boys talking.
Yeah.
And they were talking about circumcision.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like five or six. And one little boy was circumcised and the other wasn't. And the boy who wasn't circumcised asked him, did it hurt? He said, I don't remember if it hurt or not, but I couldn't walk for 2 years.
Yes, fair enough.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah.
Thanks for being with us, our little history program, and we'll talk about things that are not historical. Some are hysterical. We'll be having a little bit of fun along the way, but we'll have some serious subjects as well. And because it's NAIDOC week coming up, we'll be talking about that as well. But a couple of matters appeared in the press recently that I saw online. I thought, well, they're worth making a comment about. The first one we'd like to talk about is the New South Wales police admit to a wave of gay deaths back in the late 70s and 80s. And this was actually discussed on Saturday Magazine last weekend. If you want to go and listen to the New South Wales Police Commissioner, I think it was, who was explaining the situation.
It was very interesting, Chris, because I did listen to it. It was a very interesting discussion.
Okay, and I suggest that anybody who'd like to get the real police situation or position explained to them, there the commissioner will actually say it. But apparently, after a 3-year review of 88 murders, a task force from the New South Wales Police found that at least 27 men were slain by homophobic killers between 1975 and the year 2000. In 25 other cases, anti-gay motivation could not be ruled out.
Oh, yes. It was very well. It was every time that they did it in New South Wales, there was something in the papers about it, you know.
Well, there was the crimes of the deaths, but then there was the crime of the police not following
well,
up.
Well, they didn't, no.
Police and researchers agreed that 8 of the 27 deaths were hate crimes. The remaining 19 cases were probably anti-gay bias as well. Mm. But they are often extreme and brutal. being thrown off the cliff top is not a particularly delicate activity.
No.
And it was at the height of the AIDS crisis when anti-gay sentiment was at its peak. Gay men were targeted.
They were finding them everywhere. They were finding bodies in parks and all sorts of things at the time. And for they never ever sort of did much about it. They just let it drift along.
So are they saying now that in that time a gay life was not considered worthy?
It would appear that that was the sentiment.
So we had zero value, so why investigate?
Probably saving money.
That's so cold.
It's come to a fore because there's been a lot of aggravation about a couple of the deaths. One was an American lad who was out here on a study tour, a study thing in university, and his brother came out several times to wonder why the police hadn't done something about it, and he was agitating for something to be done. And I think it went into the local parliament, actually. The New South Wales Parliament. Mm.
Well, these days with the cultural change of a change of generation of the police force, they're now looking at these old cold cases and trying to work out why they weren't resolved.
I think, Chris, you'll find that they didn't bother about evidence or anything.
We know that now, but that's the reason behind why the investigations didn't proceed.
And
it's a cultural difference that now the modern police forces are not willing to accept the blame for previous generations.
Yep, that's right.
And the current police force are, from the top down, expressing sorrow and sympathy and apologising for this. And even the politicians are saying the laws weren't strong enough.
They did get away with murder.
Yeah.
You know, this is...
But an apology isn't enough.
Not really enough to the people that...
Doesn't do anything for me.
When they, and some of those people that were killed were very, very talented people as well.
Every life is worth living.
Oh, of course it is, yeah.
And to be thrown off a cliff, and even now, you know, anti-gay motivation. When does hate stop being hate? It's not a scale, surely.
That's right, yeah. It's pure hate, but anyhow. But at least they're trying to rectify the situation doing something.
I take these statements as the very softest way of acknowledging what went on.
That's right. Yeah, but I think, Philip, they've got to do that because there is no evidence was saved. Nothing was saved from those cases. I think you'll find, like, they keep evidence for years and years and years.
Well, but now they'll say their hands are tied. Back in the time, their hands were idle.
This is right. At least they're doing something about it.
And we have actually, in the gay community here in Victoria and other states, have received apologies from our politicians as well.
That's right.
And we've had gay crimes removed from past history books. And now that's happening in Northern Ireland as well. It's happened in UK. This pardoning and clearing of records.
That's right, because it's something to go with. I know there were a few people here in Victoria that were actually crying, and they were elderly men now, you know, because they're older men, and they've have this thing on their sheet all their lives, basically, and now they can at least have that extinguished, and they can sort of say, well, I don't have a record anymore.
Well, I can remember when there was a real change of attitude by the Victorian police, if in fact they bumped into people at places of congregating, and they would suggest, take yourselves along to the sauna or take yourself to this particular bar.
Yeah.
You'll find friends there. Don't do it in the public anymore. They didn't need to bash people up. I mean, just the mere fact of the cop car with its lights flashing and your car being right next to the car meant that, too close for comfort, thank you.
I'm leaving, bye.
And the lucky last little thing that we saw in the press in the Advocate magazine was in fact that in the UK, the anti-gay conversion therapy is gaining ground. The move to outlaw conversion therapy is being recognised by the medicos and the professionals as being the wrong solution.
But Chris, reading the article, in Britain, psychologists and psychiatrists don't have to have a degree or anything. They could just set themselves up as a psychiatrist or psychologist without anything and just charge what they want to charge, and they can tell people what they want to tell them. And I think this is where they don't have the legalisation like we do here in Australia, where you have to be registered as a psychiatrist or psychologist. In our local parliament, Philip, you looked it up. They were looking towards...
They're trying to come up with legislation.
Yeah.
But my question is, when homosexuality was removed from the list of mental illnesses, why didn't this stuff evaporate at that time?
Because I think they needed an actual legislation to sort of say that they couldn't do this thing on religious grounds. This is what the people are getting away with. The people are doing this on religious grounds, mostly because they pray the gay away and all that sort of rubbish, you know.
Yeah,
and we know that you can't, but it's very upsetting to young people who might not want to be gay, but they realise they are, and they go along to get these idiots that sort of do this. They do more damage than being gay is.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to make the statement that nobody wants to be gay, but a lot of young gay men look at the way gays have been treated historically. Why would you want that? And then you've got these religious bigots coming out and say, well, we can fix you.
Yeah, they can't.
They're not broken. Oh,
yeah, but
if you look into the other things that these people probably believe.
Oh, God, yeah.
Fortunately, we've had this argument here in Victoria for quite some time now, and locally those particular activities are outruled, even if they're not legislated against, but the industry has tidied itself up as well here.
But the worst part about it was they asked Mr. Turnbull to help them do something about it, and he said, no, it's a state responsibility, we don't want to do anything about it.
Thanks,
great leadership.
There you go.
Our pal Mal.
After our little music break and some messages, we'll be talking about NAIDOC Week, but here's a piece of music from the Pigrim Brothers.
Who are a family living in Broome who make the most beautiful music, and they're all Indigenous.
Wonder if you know. Notice me in my hometown, where I'm from. I know it isn't easy. I think you might. I'm your child. And changed just a little old and worn, heart and head full of sorrow, can't steal or borrow, life gone before.
Joy. Out, loud, proud.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. That was a gorgeous little song from the Pigrim Brothers.
I've got three or four of their recordings and they're wonderful.
And I understand that they don't like leaving home.
No, they don't. They don't like to travel very much. I think they've been overseas once and they decided they wouldn't have to go again because too many international travellers come to Broome.
If you lived in Broome, everything is too far away from you.
Well, that's what they say about Melbourne.
But anyhow, but coming up is NAIDOC Week.
The 8th of July through to the 15th of July.
Mm. They have a wonderful title this year. It's Because of Her, We Can.
Because of Her, We Can.
Yes. Now, the Her is the actual women that belong to the Indigenous societies. Because the women have been leading in so many cases for the advancement of the situation that they're in. And, of course, in the old days, it was a matriarchal society because the men were the hunter-gatherers and they would have to leave home and go kilometres to find the food, like the kangaroos and snakes
so
and what
have
you.
So they'd be out for days on end.
They could be out for days on end. And the women had to be at home looking after the fires and the camps and the kids and all the rest of it.
Yeah, the babies,
yeah. And that was the way the society worked very, very well. But then,
so I would have thought the men cooperating together was a good example of community support.
Yeah, but they were hunters. They were hunting together and they knew how to get the kangaroos into a
certain
spot.
So the women would have been left home on their own to do their own thing.
Mm. But it's amazing how through the history of white civilization here in Australia, it's been the women that have virtually carried the can for lots and lots of changes and getting up the nose of governments and everything with the way they have worked to get what they want done.
Yeah, you know, justice, like, equal rights.
That's right.
Rights to country.
That's right.
For law and justice, and access to education,
yep.
employment, and to maintain and celebrate culture, language, music, and art.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost sounding like our mission statement here.
It's sort
Joy.
Of a bit like it, yeah.
It
but,
is.
But, the, but you've got to realise what these were people that lived here for 65,000 years or more, and they never they looked after the country because it was their home and it was their basically their church as well. And because they're very spiritual people, and it's just amazing how they could live here for 65,000 years and run the country beautifully, and we come in and just under 200 years we sort of ruined it in lots of ways.
See, they preserved it because they knew they had to come back to it.
That's right. Yes,
we don't hunt and gather. We just knock it down and build.
There have been, of course, some absolutely wonderful men who have been at the forefront, like Charlie Perkins, and he led the first bus ride into the west of New South Wales to Moree, and to complain about the Aboriginal children not being allowed to use the swimming pool, and it was quite wonderful. He was a wonderful man too, with the way he did a lot. And then you had that dreadful situation where they took the children away. And that beautiful song by Archie Roach about the took the children away is just so superb and so dramatic, you know, about what happened. But then, of course, nobody wanted to apologise until Kevin Rudd came along and said that they had to have an apology.
But see, that's white arrogance, isn't it?
Isn't it?
We'll take them out of their primitive surroundings. That have been working successfully for tens of thousands of years.
Yeah. Mm.
Just because we believe our way is better.
Well, the English way, they were so perfect in everything they did. You see, that was the point.
But well,
they thought they did.
Racial superiority.
Yes, so that's what it was. Yeah.
But cultural superiority.
Does it really take 200 years for a society to look back and say, not just sorry, but we got it wrong?
Well, they don't. You don't apologise. You know, how many politicians get up and apologise for anything they make
well,
mistakes?
Well, I'm sorry, but they should.
Yeah, but they should. But see, our Indigenous people have never been recognised in the Constitution. It's just wrong.
But we need to recognise that if we haven't broken them completely, we should, instead of building them little shacks in the suburbs and saying, get out of the country, move in with us, not give them back their country, give them back their society and their storytellers, so they should be able to reclaim. And if they want to take bits of Western society, they might want to go and get a cooked chicken instead of killing a kangaroo. Them, figure it out and do it their way.
Well, this is the point, you see. They've always been controlled by the white government.
Well, the churches.
Churches, yeah, they did the thing.
When they came in, and then the states, when they set up their organisations, recognising that there were Aborigines involved, they would name those people as controllers or protectors.
That's right, protectors.
And that was the last thing that they actually really should have been doing.
But we were trying to fix the problem.
But there was no problem there in the first
place.
The
problem was they weren't white.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
And they weren't doing it our way.
Yeah, but I was listening to the television the other night, and there was one of the schools they were talking about has started teaching the Aboriginal language, the Indigenous language of that area, which is absolutely wonderful because there's so many dialects and they've all died out because nobody's been able to keep them going, which is the worst part.
They've got their songs, they've got the dreaming story, they've just got the basic day-to-day language that is all interesting, as interesting as any of the other prime foreign languages that we don't ever speak here in Australia either. But they were the European languages.
There was somebody was comparing the creation stories of the Indigenous people with the church stories, and it's almost identical what they've come up with.
Yeah.
They had their own gods, like the snakes and the animals and everything that controlled everything, which were, I suppose, you could call it God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Ghost, you know, in what we do now, you know, which seems to be that the humanity was the human feeling was the same there in the brain.
But see, that's it, it's humanity. And humans are the only animal on the planet that ask questions like why?
Yeah.
Why are we here? Where did we come from?
Mm.
There are no answers to that because we've just happened. We're survival of the fittest or... Who knows what terms would be more accurate.
And of course the
But see, religion comes along and says, oh, well, this is why.
Yeah, this is why. Yeah, and like hell it is.
Yeah, it's a man made up a story.
But see, there was the indigenous races and the communities, they came down through New Guinea because there was a land bridge to the north of Australia, and then they were able to get into Tasmania because there was a land bridge across the Bass Strait in the old days that they were able to walk across
when the
there.
Tide
and
was
to
out.
Show yeah, how superior
not even when
they
the tide
were.
Was out, it was, we were connected.
Just to let you know how superior they were, it wasn't a toll bridge.
Oh,
it was free.
They didn't charge them.
No east-west link there.
Oh, no, golly gosh. No.
So there'll be lots of NAIDOC Week activities in the coming week from the period of 8th of July to the 15th. And it's an opportunity for us ignorant people to learn a bit more about our Indigenous cultures here on Joy.
Love radio? Joy is now on iHeartRadio. Turn us on anywhere.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us. Now, what have we got this time? We've got a small little situation of Captain Cook. What did he go and do?
Well, he sort of went to the, was out in to somewhere and he was looking for a place and he ran smack bang into the east coast of Australia, the Great Southland.
Well, he did.
He beat New Zealand first, though.
Was this the search for the transit of Venus?
Transit of Venus, yes, that's right.
That was where the shadow of the Earth goes across the face of Venus. But after he'd done that, he then, as you said, bumped into the...
easternmost point in Australia was what the first part was seen. And it was named after the fellow that saw it, who was up at the mast and saw the land.
Oh, really?
Cape Byron? Hicks, his name. Cape Hicks.
He was in the crow's nest.
Yes, that's right. He was up in the crow's nest. But then Captain Cook sailed up the east coast.
He turned right, did he?
Turned right. Yeah, he actually turned starboard and went up the hill. And he saw this little bit of a bay sort of thing, and it was Botany Bay. He went into Botany Bay, and he called it that because of all the actual wonderful flowers and different sort of stuff.
He turned around and kept going.
Kept
upwards.
Going, and he missed Port Jackson, but didn't even see the opening from the heads to
and
go
then,
in.
No, and just then he straight headed past. North, and he got into a spot of bother.
Ran aground.
Took
some of the timbers off the hull, yeah.
On the Great Barrier Reef. And
he beached the boat, and then they repaired it with some local timbers. They were able to cut the timber and fix the boat up.
Make planks out of it.
And then they refloated and sailed on.
And that little village ended up with a name.
It was 1770, they called it. Yes.
And that's what it is actually called.
That's what it's called, 1770. And that's that's because of Captain Cook.
He named that place.
Mucking up his boat.
Well, that's right. he recorded the name of that little spot as a date rather
that's
than
right.
a name. There you go. So you missed out. Yeah. Terrific.
But then 18 years later, somebody else came back with a boatload of convicts. And that was because of another thing that happened with another English colony, the American colonies.
Well, the American colonies, the New World.
The New World, yes.
It was not discovered by Christopher Columbus.
No.
It was always there.
It was always there. We've always been here, but people have decided they've discovered it, but no.
And Spain, as a country, was trying to increase its wealth and be a world power. Mm-hmm. And all the others, world powers of that time, decided to get in on the act. So the Dutch and the French and the English, they all quickly whizzed across and we've got a little bit here for ourselves.
Yeah, but the British actually sent a bloke who was a Portuguese sailor called Cabot, C-A-B-O-T, and he went across there. He was the first English ship to go across the Atlantic to find it, and he thought he'd reached Asia. Aha, difference.
Yes.
And then they decided they would settle. The Pilgrim Fathers went over there and settled.
Eventually, they got the British colony there got jack of being controlled remotely
by
3 months away by the English.
They said,
up you, Jack.
No, it was up your George the Third.
Oh, that's right.
Well, no, they had such disrespect; they would have called him Jack.
Yeah, probably would have too. Yeah, but it was George the Third who was on the ruler at the time, and
had the English basically said we grabbed the whole of the continent, or was it still at that stage a portion only?
They didn't own the French part, which was Louisiana.
Yeah,
they bought that years later. The Americans bought that years later.
That was the Louisiana Purchase.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
And which is where birds in Louisiana sit in their cages.
Ah.
On the Purchase.
Oh, right.
And, of course, north of what we now think of as New York and things like that, was the Canadian area.
Yeah. But
and that was French. And that's why French. There's such a French heritage still remaining there.
They still speak French and they think they're French, but they're not French.
When they go to speak. No.
They're not at all rude. Yeah. How can you be French?
And there's lots of relics in New York of the Dutch.
It was originally called New Amsterdam and then changed its name.
The British. What was one of the governors? Peter Stuyvesant.
Peter Stuyvesant, yes, which they named after a dreadful, dreadful, dreadful product after. And then when the British took over, when the British beat the Dutch to it, they renamed it New York. So about from York.
So there's a little bit of a hotbed of land grabbing going on. Of course, the local inhabitants, they were totally ignored as well.
But then again, the Americans got very tired of the British taxing them. They said no taxation without representation because they couldn't send anybody to England to be part of their controlling body. Mm. And that they had a slightly little contretemps with some tea bags. And
they completely misunderstood the meaning of a tea party.
Is that what
because they tipped all the tea into Boston Harbor.
You're supposed to boil
not
it.
Not a party at all.
No, but you realize why. Because tea in those days was one of the most expensive commodities you could buy.
And it would have been one of the most British things you could buy.
Yeah, but the British used to have tea caddies that they locked away so people couldn't get to it. Mm. It was that expensive.
But even now, the Americans will drink tea as chilled. Hot tea is something that you have to specify in a restaurant. They'll drive on the other side of the road to the English. They'll eat their food with a fork in their right hand. All sorts of little things just to niggle the English to
get
this very day.
Coming up, of course, on the 4th of July in 1776, the peasants revolted, and they started. They won the War of Independence. Or they started the War of Independence, I think.
And then they were on their own, as it were, them thinking, how are we going to manage this mess that we've got ourselves into?
But the British then had nowhere to send their prisoners.
They were sending
prisoners to America at the time as well. So the Parliament, in its wisdom, decided, look, Captain Cook found this country right on the other side of the world. We'll send our prisoners down there.
They'll never find their way home again.
Yeah. And but that's so you can blame the American War of Independence and the July the 4th, 1776 as the idea that started Australia.
Mm. Mm. Well, I would just hope that everybody in Australia doesn't celebrate Independence Day.
No, not yet.
The 4th of July is not one of our celebrations.
No, it isn't. But the Americans, when they're living here,
well,
they do celebrate.
That's the influence of the US culture.
Yeah, yeah.
They should also temper their celebration this year because New York was the arrival point for all the immigration that came into America. Yeah. Now they have a president who's trying to stop immigration.
Mm.
What the country was literally built on.
Well,
we had the same here. Last week's program, we mentioned about the Statue of Liberty arriving in 350 pieces as a present from the French.
The Americans have always been quite insular in their attitudes, and it's only after the First World War that they started to spread their what's name around the world. Because the First World War.
Hegemony, yes.
Because, and then it just goes now.
And Mr. Trump is saying, well, we're going to withdraw ourselves from that world.
He's going back to the isolationist thing. Yeah.
He's pulled the plug out of the bath. And
we must also remember that 50 years ago, we were invaded by an American product called McDonald's.
McDonald's, yes. Yeah.
Golly gosh.
Yeah,
so all the things have gone west.
For all our American listeners, a happy 4th of July anyhow.
Yeah.
Yes. And hope you have a great day.
And good luck.
Good luck with getting rid of some of the rubbish that you've
got. Also on the 4th of July, 1947, was born Jacques Morales, the French music composer who died in 1991.
And we know what he did, didn't you?
Well, he went west.
And he formed a group.
He actually spawned lots of little groups. So there was the Girls, the Ritchie Family, and I won't play there because nobody knows them until I play it. And they say, oh, that one, didn't they do anything else? So I'll play instead one that is not by the Pet Shop Boys, because on the 10th of July 1954, Neil Tennant, the Pet Shop Boys pop musician, was born. Mm-hmm. But they also sang this song. However, it's the Village People who were a creation of Jacques Morali.
Joy, out, loud, proud.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. We've got a couple of birthdays on the list here, Gordon.
Yes, yes.
On the 9th of July 1937 was born David Hockney, yes, a UK painter.
And he is still painting.
What? Oh, he must have a big pot and a long brush.
Does he do living rooms?
I'm not quite sure. But I saw him being interviewed on the television. He's got part of an exhibition was coming to Australia somewhere. I have a feeling it was talking about. He's been painting for years. He was a gorgeous looking guy when he was young, yeah. But like all of us, as we get old, we sort of do mellow into something else. But his some of his paintings are absolutely brilliant.
By his style, would we know that he has a general theme that carries through his output?
Oh, he painted all sorts of stuff.
Why do I think, therefore, of swimming pools?
Well, I think some of his paintings have been about boys around swimming pools or the ocean beaches or something like that. Yeah, he was very fond of doing that. But then he left Britain and went to live in America. He's lived in America for a long, long time now in California. But his paintings, if you can buy one, you'd probably be hundreds and hundreds of thousands or even probably a million or two. But he's a very, very popular painter. He's been around for so long. Yeah.
You get in trouble these days taking pictures of young boys in swimming pools.
Yes.
I think that would be frowned upon quite greatly.
Yeah, but he painted them as from live because he's such a brilliant painter. He could picture people. He knew how to paint a human body, so he could just paint.
Well, they can't be real little boys because they're not going to stand still long enough to be painted.
Exactly right, yes.
Especially at a swimming pool.
Especially near a swimming pool and they're getting sunburnt or something or other and hopping around on hot sand. Yeah, but no, his paintings are absolutely lovely. He's very, very, very clever.
So what you're saying, Gordon, is that Hockney, being openly gay, explored the nature of gay love in his portraiture.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's a theme that you'd get known by, but also it's open. You'd never run out of subject matter.
No, it's also open to interpretation as well, which is what most art is, unless you're looking at some of the old masters when you know exactly what they're talking about. But some of the modern stuff that they're painting these days, you've really got to look into it.
Mm. And in apart from being a painter of his own, he was also a teacher. He was teaching art at UCLA, and he met one of his models there, an art student who posed for paintings and drawings, and with whom he was romantically involved.
Yes, I think they had a rather a long romance or relationship, didn't they?
Yeah. It's called mentoring.
It's mentoring, is it? When you lock
Bert
the door
Newton and mentioned on the Logies the other day.
Yeah, oh, lock the door and mentor. The other person that we're thinking about is an Australian musician,
Percy Grainger, I think you're meaning.
That's right.
He was born on the 8th of July, 1882. Mm-hmm. I know that's a long time ago, and he died a long time ago in 1961. Mm-hmm. However, why would he be famous?
Well, his music is still being played. It's still
played.
Oh, he
was a music composer.
Yeah, he, in the Country Garden and stuff like that, which he composed when he was in Britain. He was a friend of Grieg and a couple of other, I think, not sure whether it was Delius, but they collected
folk tunes
and turned them into bigger.
So they sampled old music and then created. So see, nothing's new in the music world. Yeah,
but then
sampling is happening even now.
Came back to Australia and he decided he'd have to have a museum, and he approached the Melbourne University. And Melbourne University said, well, you'll have to pay for it or something. Rather, he said, if I pay for it, I will build it. And he was the architect and all the rest of it. And so he built it, and it's up there. But there are certain parts of the university you have to get permission to go into, because it's where he stores all his whips.
What?
He was into flagellation and that sort of thing, yeah.
He was a kinkster.
Oh, he was kinky. He was well kinky, yeah, yeah.
How do you know? Who told you?
Well, you read biographies.
How well did you know Mr. Grainger?
You read biographies and you know what he did.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
Yes.
But I think there's more to this story.
Well, nothing to do with me. Not the whip, the whip. Anything. No, the
didn't
whip.
Didn't he involve his mother in some of this?
His mother was something a bit like that as well. I think the pair of them used to enjoy it.
Maybe we could talk about the weather.
No. Well, when you're driving up Sydney Road,
yes, you'll see this brick building.
And it looks like from the outside toilet. Like a toilet block.
Yes,
it's got
those glass bricks
in the wall
that's
for
right.
letting the light
yes,
through.
That's right, yeah.
And it's got curved walls. It's sort of late Art Deco.
Mm.
So that's him.
And you can go in there. It's open.
Didn't he also have some magic musical device that
he invented? He invented a sort of an electronic piano device sort of thing that was well ahead of its time. He was always interested in the way musical instruments worked. You can see that instrument. It's in the museum up there at the uni.
Now, if you're a fan of Big Bang Theory, you'll know that Sheldon Cooper has played one of these devices sitting on the stair. He was with this. It looks like a open fly swat, and he would introduce his hand to it and past it, and it would create a sound wave.
We're referring to the theremin.
Exactly.
Yes.
Thank you, Philip.
Which I think interacts with the electrical properties of our skin. We would have certain, units of capacity. It's hard to explain in layman's terms. We are basically electrical
devices.
Well,
we have an electric.
So we would be into
magnetic personalities as
well. Some of us, yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Not like my photographic memory that never developed.
So the theremin works, Philip?
Through our hand or our bodies or our interaction with the electric fields that it generates. Mm. And there are knobs to make the sounds different. And it's a very unique...
No, it's unique. Can't be more unique or very unique. Or
it has to be just
uniquest.
Unique.
Well, I can be bestest at something.
Stop the uniqueest.
I'm betterer. So it can be uniquer. It's not one of a kind. It's a mass-produced electrical device.
Yeah.
But it's weird.
It's a novelty device. And it doesn't allow you to actually play a particular note and sustain that note because the field is changing all the time. So the sound will be wavering.
I think every performance would be original because it would be very hard to duplicate what you did.
Yeah, by the sound. Unless you actually recorded it when you were doing it, then you could play it back. That would be the only way you'd get that.
Big Bang Theory, I think Sheldon was actually trying to play a particular tune and he got a little bit of it going, but I'm sure they dubbed the soundtrack afterwards.
Mm. Well, they would probably have had to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the location of the hand to into the field to create that note is different from the next note, which is from a hand being in a different position. So, yeah.
Me and musical instruments, that would probably be about the only one I could play.
Oh,
just throwing my hand around like that and getting different sounds.
But electronic sounds go way back in our modern history. There were a couple of gentlemen in Palo Alto in California.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's now the middle of Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
There was a Mr. Hewlett and a Mr. Packard.
Oh, right.
And they introduced an oscillator,
yeah,
which is a bit like the theremin, but more reproducible.
Yeah.
And they were hired by this man called Disney, who was working on a film called Fantasia.
Yeah.
And he wanted some noises that the orchestra couldn't make. So they were non-musical music. So they created this oscillator with knobs and switches on it to make these noises. And that was the first product they ever developed.
Wow, excellent.
And they went on to bigger and better things.
I thought they might have made cars. You said Packard.
No, Hewlett-Packard.
Hewlett-Packard.
The computers and medical equipment.
Oh, HP.
Right. HP. Yeah.
House of the Parliament, he's thinking source.
No, Black Source, yeah.
HP, yeah.
No, HP Computers.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes, which became Compaq, which became nothing.
Anyway. Oh, dear, now the Chinese have bought HP, and that's the computer that I've got at home. It's an HP. But also that development of electronic music then had Monsieur Moog.
Moog synthesizer.
And
don't say that twice in a hurry.
No.
Synthesizer. And
that was the earliest synthesizer.
But you needed to be a commercial airline pilot to fly that thing.
Yeah. It had so many knobs and buttons.
And jacks. It was like an old telephone exchange. It was horrible.
And one of the developers of that was Walter Carlos. And Walter was true to his spirit and later known in his productive life as Wendy Carlos.
Mm.
A very successful Carlos transition. And there, of course, from these Moog synthesizers is our latest synthesizers and keyboards and electronic music and looping, which I think happens in song contests like
Eurovision. The girl Eurovision won it with the looping.
Yeah.
Well, a little closer to home.
And the boy Voice won Australia. He won the Voice, didn't he?
2 weeks
looping.
Ago.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Sam Preston. He's very talented.
Yeah.
Well, enough of this rubbish. Yes. Let's go away, gentlemen, and find out what we can talk about next week and come back next time.
Oh, in another week's time.
Do another program.
Oh, look
and
on.
We hope that you will listen to us.
I'm sure of something will have happened. Yeah.
This scintillating, electrifying conversation.
Yes, well, it is electrifying, isn't it? Because that's what's happening to us.
Yeah. We've been digitized.
Thank you very much. All
Thank
the
you.
Best.
Bye for now.
Next bye-bye. Week.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.